Tonight, deadly explosions leave a big American city in fear. Package bombs being left on people's doorsteps, blowing up in their faces.
So she picked it up, it detonated, boom, exploded.
Tonight, police say the mystery blasts appear to be connected. Final moments from on board that sightseeing helicopter before it plunged onto an icy river in New York City. The passengers smiling for the camera shortly before they perish. Tonight, what the sole survivor, the pilot, is telling investigators may have caused the crash. Another massive storm is closing in, the third nor'easter in just 10 days. Heartache for prospective parents as tragedy strikes another major fertility clinic. Thousands of frozen eggs and embryos may be lost. And did O.J. Simpson confess to that infamous double murder in a newly unearthed television interview?
And I remember I grabbed a knife.
What he called a hypothetical description, others are calling his chilling confession.
This is NBC Nightly News with Lester Holt.
Good evening and welcome to our viewers in the West joining us tonight. An urgent warning has gone out this evening to residents in Austin, Texas, after two package bombs exploded at people's homes today, one of them killing a teenage boy. The attacks are the second and third bombings there this month, bringing the death toll to two and leaving two others badly hurt.
These are very powerful devices, and that's why, again, it is so imperative that no one attempts to touch, move, or handle one of these packages if you come across it.
Tonight, Austin police telling residents to be wary of unexpected packages and now think today's explosions are, in fact, linked to another deadly blast just over a week and a half ago. Our Gabe Gutierrez is in Austin and has the latest.
Tonight, police in Austin have an urgent plea.
If the package that is delivered to your doorstep looks suspicious in any way, call 911.
An already frantic search for clues ratcheted up around noon today as a third package bomb ripped through another neighborhood here. A 75-year-old woman badly injured.
How scary was it?
Man, very scary. There was glass inside the box. When she picked up the package, as soon as she picked it up, it detonated. Boom, exploded.
It came after another blast just 5 miles away before dawn.
There was a package that exploded inside of the home.
Police say a 17-year-old boy was killed and a woman wounded inside their kitchen.
There's going to be two patients.
Neighbors horrified.
It's pretty wild. It's crazy.
Three explosions in 10 days, the first back on March 2nd that killed 39-year-old Anthony House.
And it shook the windows, and at first I just kind of froze and then grabbed my son. And
initially, that was ruled a suspicious death. Police are now investigating it as a homicide.
This evidence makes us believe that these incidents are related.
Investigators say all three packages were average size, not mailed or sent by an official delivery service, and someone quietly left the boxes on the doorsteps. It's unclear whether the victims were targeted. Now, fears that a serial bomber may be on the loose.
The bomber is very specific. They know how to make the triggering mechanism. They know how to kill. This is a bomber who knows how to kill.
So far, police say they found a pattern, but not a motive, as neighbors hope for an arrest before another delivery turns deadly.
Austin police and federal agents have shut down several blocks here at this latest scene. Investigators say that they don't believe that these explosions are connected to the South by Southwest Festival, which is underway right now and brings more than 400,000 visitors to Austin each year. Lester.
You can certainly understand the fear there tonight. Gabe, thank you. Tonight, we're seeing some of the final moments inside that ill-fated sightseeing helicopter in New York, the kind of chopper that tourists board every day all across the country. This one going down in the icy waters of the East River off Manhattan last evening. And we're also learning what the sole survivor, the pilot of that helicopter, is telling investigators may have caused the chopper to go down. NBC's Tom Costello covers aviation for us and has the new details.
Tonight, video from inside a New York helicopter just before it turned into a death trap for five passengers. This afternoon, the downed chopper was pulled from the ice-cold East River. Just after 7 p.m. Sunday, when the pilot declared an emergency, cell phone video captured the horrifying crash as fellow pilot David Windmiller relayed the mayday to controllers.
It appears the aircraft is inverted in the water.
Seconds later, the Eurocopter was sinking.
The only thing that was sticking out whatsoever was the floats off of each one of the skids.
All five passengers died. Among the victims, a Dallas firefighter and a tourist from Argentina. Pilot Richard Vance told police a strap from a passenger's bag may have accidentally wrapped around and pulled an emergency fuel cutoff lever, like this. The tourists trapped in their harnesses similar to these as the chopper turned over and sank. Eric Adams snapped this photo of the Liberty chopper. He was in the same pre-flight safety briefing before leaving in a different chopper.
First, you have to extract yourself from the tether. Then you have to get yourself out of the seatbelt. And where is that buckle? Is it in front of you? Is it to the left? Is it to the right? Those are all things that would not have been easy to figure out in a chaotic crash situation.
All of a sudden now, because of the dark and because of the disorientation, people don't know how to open up the seatbelt.
Tonight, 14 NTSB investigators are on the scene.
There were harnesses. We'll be looking at this helicopter to see whether the harnesses were functioning and whether the passengers were using them.
Investigators are also looking into whether the doors on the chopper were open to allow for better photography and whether that allowed more water to suddenly rush in, sinking the chopper and dooming those passengers. The company, Liberty Helicopter, says it's cooperating with investigators. Its third crash in 11 years. Lester.
Tom Costello in New York tonight. Thank you. After a somewhat mild month of February, the first half of March has been absolutely brutal for tens of millions across the country. Snow blanketing parts of Kentucky today, and in the northeast cities from New York to Boston, they're bracing for a third nor'easter in just 10 days. Al Roker is with us. We love you, buddy, but you've been here a lot lately.
I'm starting to wear out my welcome, Lester. I understand. You look at the country, much of it very clear, but you get into the northeast, and that's where the problems are. Chicago, a few delays there, but now we're going to get into the meat of this storm as it starts to develop. Now, here's the only saving grace we've got. Temperatures are going to be at or above freezing tomorrow morning when the snow is really getting together. So it's going to take a while for it to gain momentum and start to really put down some accumulations. In fact, New York City will be 39 by 5 o'clock on Tuesday, but still near freezing as you get into New England. Here are the amounts we're looking for. 1 to 2 inches in New York. Lake Placid, about 5 to 10. Hartford, 4 to 8. Boston, 8 to 14. We have blizzard warnings throughout much of the Massachusetts coastline, with the exception of Boston. Portland will see about 8 to 14 inches, Lester. Hopefully, this is the last one, but, you know, the blizzard of 1888 happened in late March, so we're not out of the woods yet.
You're welcome anytime, but preferably for the start of spring, maybe.
Okay.
All right, Al Roker, thanks. We'll turn out of the battle raging over guns in our nation's capital. The White House rolling out its new school safety plan to combat gun violence, but it does not include certain proposals President Trump initially made, like imposing new federal age restrictions. NBC's Peter Alexander has the story for us.
In the wake of last month's massacre in Parkland, President Trump stunned gun rights groups, publicly supporting tough new restrictions.
It's not going to be talked like it has been in the past.
It doesn't make sense that I have to wait till I'm 21 to get a handgun, but I can get this weapon at 18. I don't know.
We didn't address it, Mr. President.
I think
you know why? Because you're afraid of the NRA, right?
But now, despite denials from the White House, it's the president who appears to be bending to the NRA, whose leaders he hosted here one day after that televised call to action. On raising the age limit to purchase firearms, President Trump today tweeting, not much political support, to put it mildly. The idea instead simply under review by a soon-to-be-formed commission on school safety, headed by Education Secretary Betsy DeVos, with no clear timeline.
What happened? What changed? Everything is on the table, and the commission that is being formed, of which I will lead, is going to be looking at this issue along with a number of other issues.
The president for now advocating fixing the background check system, not expanding it, despite just weeks ago expressing an openness to comprehensive checks, improving mental health programs, and arming some properly trained teachers, an idea that a majority of Americans and teachers' groups oppose. Tonight, Democrat Dianne Feinstein slamming President Trump, who she says completely caved to the gun lobby, a point the White House disputes.
He hasn't backed away from these things at all. They're still outlined in the plan, but he can't make them happen with a broad stroke of the pen.
Tonight, the White House is not commenting on another new headline. Adult film star Stormy Daniels' attorney in a letter today offering to refund an alleged hush money payment to the president so Daniels would be freed up to share her story. No comment from the president's lawyer. The White House denies the president had any sexual relationship with Daniels. Lester.
Peter Alexander at the White House tonight. Thank you. There is growing outrage tonight and some sadness over why two top fertility clinics in two different parts of the country experience major failures at the very same time. In both cases, thousands of frozen eggs and embryos may no longer be viable, leaving hundreds of families heartbroken and putting their dreams of having children in jeopardy. Some now taking legal action. NBC's senior national correspondent Kate Snow has the latest.
It's my worst fear realized. It is a nightmare.
Caitlin Gerbach had tumors on her ovaries in her 20s, so she froze 4 embryos and 10 eggs at University Hospital's fertility clinic in Cleveland.
It was my future. It was all, you know, hopes and dreams that I had for the rest of my life were based around being a mom. And now that's, you know, been taken from me.
Gerbach is planning to file suit after learning her embryos and eggs were in the tank that malfunctioned. 2 class action lawsuits were filed this morning in Cleveland. One alleges alarms did go off when the tank became too warm on Saturday night, March 3rd. But, quote, nobody was at the clinic to hear or answer those alarms. By the time the clinic staff returned the next day, it was too late.
This just can't happen. It should never happen again.
That law firm has already heard from families in San Francisco, too. Patients at the Pacific Fertility Clinic just learned of a similar failure. A single piece of equipment lost liquid nitrogen for a brief period of time, the clinic said in part. We have brought in independent experts and are conducting a full investigation. Fertility labs are largely self-regulated, accredited by industry groups, and inspected on average every 2 years. A leading fertility doctor doubts the 2 failures are linked.
To have 2 they simultaneously happened would be to have a commercial airline crash in both California and Ohio on the same day.
Both labs are apologizing to patients.
We are so very, very sorry. We want to do all that we can to support them.
Lester, the industry group that inspects these labs, most of the fertility labs, told me today that there's no requirement to report problems unless there's a complaint filed or a negative news story. In fact, the clinic in Cleveland didn't report anything until after our story aired last week. The San Francisco lab reported it just yesterday, a week after its malfunction.
Your heart just breaks for these families. How do they determine what's viable and what's not?
So the saddest part is that there's no way to know unless you try to get pregnant using these embryos and these eggs. So until they take them out of storage and try, they won't know.
All right. Kate Snow, thank you. It was called the trial of the century after a vicious double murder, the infamous white Bronco chase, and the dramatic acquittal of O.J. Simpson and the killings of his ex-wife and her friend. Now, nearly a quarter century later, a newly unearthed television interview that has a lot of people asking, did O.J. Simpson confess that he did it? Here's NBC's Joe Fryer.
You know, we talk in this book about hypotheticals.
In the 12-year-old interview, which finally aired Sunday on Fox, O.J. Simpson was asked to speculate about the murders of his ex-wife Nicole Brown and Ron Goldman.
I don't think any two people could be murdered the way they were without everybody being covered in blood.
He was speaking with publisher Judith Regan to promote the book, If I Did It.
You reached under the seat for
A knife.
In what was called a hypothetical account of the crime, Simpson said he and a friend named Charlie went to his ex-wife's house.
As things got heated, I just remember Nicole fell and hurt herself. Then I remember I grabbed a knife. I do remember that portion, taking a knife from Charlie. And to be honest, after that, I don't remember.
Public backlash kept Fox from airing the interview in 2006, but it resurfaced in a 2-hour special called O.J. Simpson, The Lost Confession.
You write about removing a glove before taking the knife from Charlie.
You know, I had no conscious memory of doing that, but obviously I must have because they found a glove there.
The former football star was found not guilty during a criminal trial. One of the prosecutors, Christopher Darden, reacted to the interview.
I think he's confessed to murder.
But Simpson's attorney says his client only did the interview and book for money.
This interview is not really an interview. It's essentially almost a fake interview that goes along with a fictional book that was not even written by Mr. Simpson.
An old interview making new headlines. Joe Fryer, NBC News.
We are learning chilling new details about the gunman who killed 3 staffers at the nation's largest veterans home. According to a new report, the brother of shooter Albert Wong says Wong, quote, wanted to get back at the staffers at the home in Yountville, California. Wong killed 3 mental health clinicians he had taken hostage before authorities found him dead. He was an Army veteran who served in Afghanistan and was being treated for PTSD at the clinic. until he was recently expelled. Still ahead as we continue tonight on the trail of a would-be assassin, new clues about the nerve agent used to poison an ex-spy and the most direct accusations yet against Russia. Also, those who serve, police officers helping kids chart their own course through the voyage of life. Stay with us. We're back now with the new twists in the plot to poison a Russian ex-spy and his daughter. British Prime Minister Theresa May today said it's highly likely Russia was behind the apparent assassination attempt. Now the two countries could be on the brink of a full-blown diplomatic crisis. NBC's Bill Neely has the latest.
Police today still searching for traces of a lethal chemical weapon, for a trail to whoever poisoned ex-Russian spy Sergei Skripal. In Parliament, high drama. Britain's Prime Minister pointing at Russia.
It is now clear that Mr. Skripal and his daughter were poisoned with a military-grade nerve agent of a type developed by Russia.
It's called Novichok, developed by the Soviets in the 1970s. Used as a fine powder, it can cause suffocation and heart failure within a minute and is 8 times more deadly than VX, the nerve agent used to kill Kim Jong-un's half-brother in a brazen airport attack.
The government has concluded that it is highly likely that Russia was responsible.
Russia denies it, though former KGB agent, now President Putin, told Russian viewers last night there's one thing he can't forgive. Betrayal, he says. Skripal worked for British intelligence. Revenge, a clear motive. May is demanding answers by tomorrow, weighing sanctions against Russia. Skripal and his daughter are still fighting for their lives. Bill Neely, NBC News, London.
Still to come here tonight, the woman who claimed a massive Powerball jackpot winning something else in court today that might be even more important to her. Tonight, it's sweet victory for the winner of a massive Powerball jackpot who went to court fighting to remain anonymous while collecting the $560 million prize, or in her case, a $264 million lump sum. It all started when she mistakenly signed her real name to her winning ticket rather than writing the name of a private trust to shield herself from all the unwanted attention. The judge took her side, and tonight she gets the cash while keeping her name a secret. And it's not $500 million, but how does $1 million a year for the rest of your life sound? That's what billionaire Warren Buffett is offering any of his employees who correctly guess all Sweet 16 teams in this year's NCAA basketball tourney. While the odds of picking all 16 teams are astronomical, the employee whose bracket remains perfect the longest gets $100,000. And he was known as the tailor to the stars, the fashion world mourning the passing of famed French designer Hubert de Givenchy. He founded his label in 1952 and designed dresses for first ladies and movie legends like Jackie Kennedy, Elizabeth Taylor, and Grace Kelly. Givenchy also made his mark on the big screen, designing the iconic black dress Audrey Hepburn wore in Breakfast at Tiffany's. He was 91. We'll take a short break. When we come back, cops and kids teaming up for a big adventure on the open water. Those Who Serve is next. Finally tonight, our ongoing series of stories about Those Who Serve takes us to Florida. A viewer there tipped us off to this one about some Orlando police officers who found the best way to build a bond with kids in the community is with a paddle, a boat, and some healthy competition. Justin Wilkins and Marius Gideon have been patrolling Orlando's Paramore neighborhood for years.
Hey, how you doing, ma'am?
Here, crime and drugs run rampant.
I think the biggest problem is that some of the community doesn't want us there.
When they see the police, all they see is trouble.
But they're determined that the younger generation sees something else. And so for an hour a week, their focus shifts from the streets to the water. They call it Dueling Dragons, a volunteer program connecting Orlando police officers with at-risk teens. Training to compete together on a dragon boat racing team.
It's something that you will fall in love with after your first time doing it.
These kids end up building relationships with us, and they see that there, you know, is a different side to us. We are here to help them.
And not just preparing for competitions.
They see us in a boat, they're like, oh my God, these guys are human, these guys are paddling with me, they're breathing hard, just as we are.
I want to be that mentor. Just because where you come from, it doesn't matter where you end up.
One,
Now in its eighth season, both cops and teens find there's a lot to learn.
They're able to help kids that have no type of connection with police officers, so we can actually have a conversation to turn into a relationship, to turn into a bond.
Stroke by stroke, a partnership becoming even stronger on the water and the streets.
And it looks like a lot of fun, too. Don't forget, if there's someone who serves in law enforcement, military, fire, medicine, or whatever capacity with a story we should know about, tell us about them on our Facebook page. We appreciate you spending part of your evening with us. That is Nightly News for this Monday night. I'm Lester Holt. For all of us at NBC News, thank you for watching and good night.
More Americans watch NBC News than any other news organization in the world.